last Sabbath in the announcements while going through the, I thought something was coming through the house. It's these guys with their trucks that have to just get on it for some reason. Last Sabbath in the announcements while going through the Proverbs, which we try to do just about every Sabbath, I discussed Proverbs 23, verse 13 to 14, where it talks about correcting our children. I've received a little bit of correspondence on that. Some thank you very much to, well, not thanking me very much. Again, God has, we have a responsibility in teaching to teach the truth and what God says, and, you know, not everybody wants to hear that. I received several positive comments, though, thanking me for not being afraid to talk about the subject. And a couple people asked specifically, I was asked to talk more about the subject in upcoming sermon messages. So here we go. Many years during the Feast of Tabernacles, I've been privileged to ask our Father in Heaven to bless little children. We call it the Blessing of Little Children ceremony. It's sort of like when someone says, would you bless the meal? I say, no, I'll ask God to bless it. I can't bless anything, but we can lay hands on people and ask God to bless them. And every year when we do this, every year when we do the Blessing of Little Children or at various times, it soberly reminds me of being a parent and my responsibility. Now, I'm a parent. My children are grown. They have their children. I'm a grandparent now. But we still have a responsibility. I've heard people say, when you're 18, you're done. I'm done with my responsibility. Well, then there's these little verses that you go through. They're big verses. One of them says to lay up for your grandchildren. It doesn't say your children. It says your grandchildren. We misinterpret that. You know? So by reflection, what it's saying is you need to, yet maybe financially if you can, but emotionally, psychologically, through example. It doesn't mean you just say, oh, I keep my hands off completely. No. It doesn't. It's a fine balance. In January of 2006, so this is going back a few years ago. You hear the ice. In January 2006, I had surgery for my left knee in Guatemala. Subsequently, I've had left, right. I don't know. I've lost track. But during that time, and actually it was my right knee, so I got to correct that. I had, not that it's a big deal, but I'm getting confused here. I had surgery on my right knee in Guatemala. During that time, I ambulated for about 10 days before returning to the United States. They would not let me get on a plane, and safety-wise, potential of a blood clot or other problems. And so I was in the home of a medical doctor there, church member, and I had a lot of time to do basically nothing. I had no PT. I just was stuck there. I would go out and sit on a little cheap plastic chair in the alley and watch the birds in the alley and the critters running around and occasionally little kids or people. But I had a book I'd brought with me, someone recommended. And it brought my attention to the heavy responsibility we as parents have. And we do have a responsibility, and I'm going to show you the book here a little bit. We do have a responsibility for our children, our families, and the Western world in general. It isn't just, it's only me. I don't need to worry about anybody else. That's a selfish approach. That's a myopic, ignore reality approach. Ignore what God says. Well, 1 year later, in 2007. So this goes back a few years. And much of this material is information from back then, because I talked about this topic back in 2007 the first time. There was a Barna survey. You may know what Barna is. There was a Barna survey, and there was an update that illustrated a problem, a crisis we are faced within this Western world. We have many. Just prior to the feast in 2013, I gave a sermon message on the origin of evil and violence, and how we need the culture of this world to be dramatically, just incredibly changed and replaced by the culture of God. It was entitled, that message, La Cultura de Dios, the culture of God. I explained that Satan and the spirit world are behind it, influencing our human nature, and coupled with our own human nature, how susceptible we are to being absorbed into the direction that society is going. Now remember, I gave this in 2007. You'll notice many things have not changed one bit. They've only gotten worse. Our adversary is trying to destroy mankind in any way that he possibly can. Do we see that? One way, and I hope that parents with children will listen to this carefully. One way our adversary is doing this is by destroying the next generation, which is our children. Our adversary hates the family because he cannot reproduce himself. Families can. We can have children, we can have grandchildren, although many nations of the world are starting to have less and less children. It's becoming a problem that, like, wow, they're just not having them. And many don't want to. And many say, I don't want to have any kids. We know some close to us. We don't want to have any kids. They're a pain in the rear. They're too much work. I don't have time for kids. Well, God is producing a family which our adversary hates with every bit of his being. And we are told in 2 Corinthians 2, verse 11, we must not be ignorant of his devices and approaches. Verse 11, lest Satan should take advantage of us, for we are not ignorant. If you choose to be ignorant, shame on you. You shouldn't. And so I want to take a look at some excerpts from the book I read while ambulating in Guatemala after my surgery. Here's the name of it. The Marketing of Evil by David Kapilian. Okay? You see that, Paul? The Marketing of Evil by David Kapilian. It says how radicals, elitists, and pseudo-experts sell us corruption disguised as freedom. Well, the chapter I want to look at, the selling of sex and corruption to our kids. David Kapilian's the editor of WorldNet Daily, or was. You know, military and private schools and Boy Scouts have uniforms. Do you realize so does the youth culture? Now remember, this is 2007. Baggy pants, backward hats, chokers, jewelry, body piercings, tattoos. But if uniforms symbolize values and allegiance, a loyalty to a higher or a lower order, then in this case, it's an allegiance to an increasingly defiant musical, social, sexual, and cultural world. It's a mysterious, to parents, realm that seems magically to be drawing millions of children into it. Back years ago when it first came out, it was called the gangsta generation. It's a hip-hop in suburbia, the culture of rap. Now you're saying, oh, he's going to go after rap. Everywhere students wear baseball caps turned backwards or pulled down over their eyes or their ears, oversized T-shirts, ridiculously baggy jeans or shorts with dropped crotches, I'm reading from the book, that hang to mid-shin and waist that sag to reveal the tops of brightly covered boxers. Expensive name brand high tops complete the outfit. Variations on the theme are hooded sweatshirts with the hood worn during school and during do-rags. Okay? You all know what a do-rag is? Bandanas tied on the head with a style copied from street gangs. Let's take a look at the profound influence. And you may say, oh, that doesn't bother me. I don't have to do that. Don't stick your head in the sand, folks. Well, it doesn't matter what they do. You need to pay attention to what's going on, because if you just say, oh, that all doesn't pertain to me. It's okay. It's just the fad. We're going to see what God says about that. Because it's a profound influence that the present cultural trends are having on the younger generation, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. What is amazing to me is, as I'm in public, some, not as much as I used to be, the culture is now affecting older adults and even people that are my age, in their 50s and 60s and 70s. In our travels internationally, which we extensively have made, when we're on an airplane, in tourist areas, restaurants, I see 30, 40, 50, 60, 70-somethings wearing the same clothing, looking the same, acting the same. I went in before surgery on my shoulder for my pre-op, and there was a man there in front of me. I asked him when he was done, I said, hey, man, I said, you look pretty good. How old are you? He said, I'm 77. He was dressed like he was 16 or 17 or 18. And it just looked very different. You can, when you're traveling, spot Americans. You look at how they dress. This is a stereotype. But remember when it first started, you could tell when they were going to board a plane. Shorts and flip-flops. Right? It's cool. Have you ever tried walking through an airport carrying your luggage any distance at all in flip-flops? I don't get it, but it's cool, right? And more, it started out with a few tattoos. Now people are covered. The head, the face. It used to be that was only in prisons. And the girls. You know, you go out and you get someone serving you food that doesn't have all that. I've complimented. Man, it's nice to see normal-looking skin. Well, now you're judging, and we can't judge. But even some in God's church reflect it and have no clue, or they have no problem with being in and accepting the cultural shift. We live in the Bible Belt here in Lower Alabama. Even my primary physician made a comment the other day, we're blessed to live here. Do you know that? I said, oh, I do. Many might think it doesn't have the same influence in this region or on our children, but indeed it does. I recently watched a video from two different church services, and I wasn't surprised to see how the children, the teens, and the adults, and the worship leaders, and the guy giving the message looked, because they're a reflection of the culture. You go down to Orange Beach, there's, I won't mention the names, but there's all these churches popping up. And you look at the worship leaders, and this is the Bible Belt. I'm just going to say this. If I start coming up here in flip-flops, shorts, New York Yankees, if they still that name, baseball, backwards baseball cap, chewing gum, we're in trouble. Okay? I mean, it's bad enough that they don't wear a tie. Pardon my little bit of sarcasm. But, you know, it may not be as profound, but there we need to be aware of it. It does matter. It does matter. Let's go back in history a few short years. You remember the Virginia Tech tragedy? April 23rd, 2007, the Barna Survey. From Ventura, California, researchers and bestseller author George Barna says the current public debate about the implications of that tragedy is missing the point. The animated conversations about gun control, and we still get this today, do we not? The lady that was running for president talked about it. The animated conversations about gun control, campus security, counseling standards, campus communications, drug abuse, mental health funding do not address the core issue raised by this event. The situation is not primarily a challenge to politicians, educators, or police. It should be a dramatic wake-up call to parents. Let's cite some research. Barnett's studies on parenting and child development led him to offer a series of facts and observations related to the Virginia Tech situation. Now, this goes back to 2007. It is multiplied. By the time an average American child is 23 years old, as was the killer in Virginia, he will have seen countless murders among more than 30,000 acts of violence to which he is exposed through television, movies, and video games. People argue, that doesn't influence young people. But there are children who have emotional and psychological problems are more prone to this type of influence. I had a private counseling practice. Over and over, I worked with children dealing with emotional instability due to violence they had witnessed, viewed, or been part of. There were video games, Tour of Duty, World of Warcraft. Oh, how dare you criticize that? We increasingly are seeing more violent crimes committed by children. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 3 and verse 5. Isaiah chapter 3 and verse 5. Here are some prophecies concerning the younger generation. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5. I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. Many of our leaders now are like children. How they act, what they say, what they think, it's almost scary. Verse 12. As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women shall rule over them. O my people, they which lead you cause you to err and destroy the way of your paths. By the age of 23, the average American will have viewed thousands of hours of pornographic images which diminish the dignity and value of human life. On Facebook, when viewing the general wall with your friends or your own profile, many times you'll see ads for men gamers only, scantily, very graphic photos of women role models. Ooh, I like that. You better not. If you're watching, yeah, you like it. You're wired that way. But don't go after that. But it's okay, right? No, it's not okay. Even Pimsleur Spanish, which is a quite successful study for Spanish, it's a very good tool learning another language, has very well-endowed women or girls advertising the ad. Don't tell me it doesn't sell. They all know what sells because it grabs attention. The images lodge in your mind. They sear the brain. They rewire the syntax, and it's like a rush. It's like taking a drug. I gave plenty of seminars to the ministry in conferences over the years on this. Those who watch the stuff want to imitate it. Look at the young people on school breaks. Back in the day, when I was a teenager, a young adult, many would watch Girls Gone Wild at spring break. You may think, my children have no idea what that is. Well, maybe now they don't, because it's gravitated to stuff that's so much worse. I don't even know what it is. The damage it does to marriage. Let's go to Mark chapter 7. So you're not married, it's okay. No, it's not okay. Mark chapter 7. I know, I'm getting very personal, aren't I? Okay. You can disconnect with me if you don't like it. Mark chapter 7, verse 18. And he said unto them, are you so without understanding? Do you not perceive that whatsoever things from without enter to the man, it cannot defile him? Because it enters not into his heart, but into the belly, the stomach, and goes out in the elimination, purges all meats. And he said, that which comes out of a man, that defiles the man. From within, out of the heart of men. Okay, the heart. Proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornication, murderers, thefts, covetous, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, and foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and they defile the man. Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, what does it say? Let's go there. Philippians 4 and verse 8. We've read this many times. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, and I'm going to skip the repeat, whatsoever things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise or meditation on those things, think on these all day long. After nearly a quarter of a century on earth, the typical American will have listened to hundreds of hours of music that foster anger, hatred, disrespect for authority, selfishness, and radical independence. Can you not pull up to get gas at a gas station, and usually it's a car or a truck that's sitting like this, and the music's blaring, and you hear all the expletives, blank this, blank that, blank the police, blank the government. Can you listen to most rap songs? And their language is okay? Listen to the words of the music, of the cars that drive by, or they're parked. The younger generation is hooked on music. Many cannot go anywhere without their music. Their iPod, their phones. They got to have something, always going. I know that when we first started to travel a lot on airplanes, most of those under the age of 40 had earphones in their ears. And the stewardess or the flight attendant would come up and say, you need to take those out. We're getting ready to start. Huh? You need to buckle your seatbelt. Huh? They're walking. And they're standing, stopped right in the middle of the airport as you're trying to walk around them. Listen to their music. Or on the phone or whatever they're doing. They can't function without it always being in the ears. They sit in their bedrooms and they listen to music by the hours. Oh, come on, man, that's normal. You're a dinosaur, Scott. The typical worldview of a person in their early 20s promotes self-centeredness, a right to happiness and fulfillment, and mom and dad or grandpa and grandma need to mind their own business. I've heard that plenty. Recent study shows that many of the younger generation cry on the job when they're corrected by their boss. They have always been told they're the greatest. They can do anything. We're going to give you a participation award. Okay? So they cry when they don't get their way or if they're corrected. The importance of personal expression in all forms. The necessity of tolerating aberrant or immoral points of view allows for disrespect in other people and use of profanity, advanced forms of generic spirituality that dismiss the validity of the Judeo-Christian faith. It's largely propelled by postmodern thought. The typical worldview of young people does not facilitate respect for life, acceptance of the rule of law, or the necessity of hard work. And our leadership reflects that. You pardon your son who is as guilty as sin. That's okay. No, it's not okay. Acceptance of rule of law, hard work, personal sacrifice, paying the dues or contributing to the common good. We're going to cancel all your college debt because we love you. Just vote for us. What does that teach? Barna noted that only about 2% of today's teenagers possess a biblical worldview that acknowledges the existence of God, Satan, sin, the availability of forgiveness or grace through Christ, and the existence of absolute moral principles provided by the Bible. Going back again, I know this is old data. Back in 2007, the average adolescent spent more than 40 hours a week digesting media. And this was before all the smartphone stuff we have now, to the same extent, and social media. The typical teenager in America absorbs 60 hours of media content minimum each week. How many hours a day equals 60? 10 hours a day if you only go 6 days a week and take a break for the Sabbath. For better or worse, the messages received from the media represent a series of unfiltered, non-chaperoned worldview lessons. We're not talking about studying world news, international trends, the stock market. They're digesting music, TV, movies, videos, game players, you name it. And then you introduce sports, right, and soap operas, and talk shows, and podcasts, and the list goes on. When I first bought my first purchase to discuss a new smartphone, okay, this thing, right, a little computer in your hand, I was told this, and I wrote it down because it was so, what a quote. Well, the biggest factor, sir, you need to consider is how much media are you going to be downloading, unquote. I said, I wanted to be able to stay in touch with my employees. And then he said, again, 2007, do you watch the average amount of movies and download music? I said, what's the average? He said, 6.5 hours per day. And I laughed. He said, what's so funny? I said, quote, when am I going to find to do that? YouTube wasn't even popular then. The salesman said, dude, you are kidding me, right? Everybody does that. Okay, everybody does that. It appears that many as one out of every five young people has also been under the influence of mood-altering medications, some of whose long-term side effects are not fully understood by the medical community. Drugging children, that's one of the reasons I chose to become a psychologist, not a psychiatrist. There's a big difference. Drugging children has become one of the ways in which we have coped with other serious culture and personal issues. Stress levels have been steadily rising among young children over the past couple of decades. A variety of factors have contributed to such stress. Parental acrimony and divorce, household financial troubles, media-fed expectations regarding materialism, overscheduling of children, bullying, physical abuse within the home, and excessive peer pressure. One-third of the nation's teenagers report having been in a physical fight at least once in the last year. Nearly one out of every five ninth, and again, this is from Barna, one out of every five ninth through 12th grade students has carried a gun, a knife, or a club in the past month. You ever notice when you go into buildings, you cannot carry a concealed carry or a gun, open carry, a knife, any instrument of possible injury? If you see that, you better not be carrying it, because I know some of you do. Education, both in the home and outside of it, provide diminishing emphasis upon the development of character, increasing emphasis upon meeting academic performance standards, especially through standardized testing. Growing numbers of children seek to make their way through an increasingly complex life without the traditional safety net comprised of a loving and supportive parents, grandparents, and family. A stable circle of supportive peers, teachers who know and help and nurture the child, a community of faith inclusive of a caring pastor that assists in giving meaning to life and a sense of belonging. Divorce continues to be rampant today. People do not have their extended families close. I'm an example of that. What's our closest family member, Nebraska? Oh, your parents, I'm sorry. Sorry, Harry and Lorna. In Texas. But that's 11 hours. What is it to see my mom? 20, and then my kids? 26? Many young people admit they feel as if they do not receive sufficient attention from their parents. They do not have enough good friends whom they can count on, and unsettled about their own future. They have personal spiritual perspective, but not much of a sense of community spiritually. They lack role models, and they don't feel that they have intrinsic value. And your little iPad or your phone with a video is not going to promote that. To whom do young people turn? Their peers. Peers are more important than parents to many young people. They're around them 8 to 10 hours a day at school and after school. Their peers' opinions count. Perception, as I've said, is the reality. We need to understand that. Perception is their reality. Parents have a huge influence on who their children grow up to become. When I was growing up, my parents said, you cannot spend time with that person. Oh, Dad. I'm going to tell you a story. I may regret this. But growing up down the street, there was a family and a couple small children, a young boy that was about my age, a little younger, and a much younger, not too old, baby boy. And my dad said to me one day, I don't want you going down there. And I said, why? What's the problem? Kind of flippant. He said, because the word on the street is that man is a raging alcoholic and he abuses his wife. I don't want you there. I said, but he's a friend. He said, not anymore. I said, he just invited me down and mom said I could go. Well, I haven't talked to your mom about this yet. When is it? I said, tomorrow night. He said, you're not going. I threw a fit. My dad was the stupidest camel that ever walked the earth. You know what happened that next night? He came home drunk, beat the tar out of his wife, and killed his young son by accident because he was drunk. What if I'd been there spending the night? Now, you may say, oh, what a horrible example. That never happens. Parents have a huge influence on who their children grow up to become. Parents cannot guarantee their kids will be in specific ways to behave, but their parenting style and practice can hugely influence the likelihood of certain behaviors and perspectives. What we find is parents, and this is what I'm giving this for, parents are struggling Raising healthy and confident children in today's world is not an easy task. Citing recent studies his firm had completed, Barna highlighted some of the struggles that American parents are currently facing. Again, 2007, it's only gotten worse. A majority of parents feel overly busy, stressed out, or buckling under the pressure of mounting financial debt. I get this discussion from a number of people. How it's just so hard to pay for all the things they have. I hear that a lot. Both parents work in most homes. Now, I'm not saying a balance. I'm saying a full-time career job. Many single-parent homes, a father, a mother, doesn't exist. They're not there. They're not around. They're gone. Materialism motivates people. Credit card debt, living beyond our means. Now, as Dave Ramsey says, if you have credit card debt, you're not paying it off completely every month, you have no business buying a new vehicle or going out to eat. Period. What? He's a financial advisor, quite successful. Some people pay just the minimum on their credit card every month. And will still buy things, do things. I'm not talking emergency. You need that vehicle to get to work. I'm not talking about that. They'll take vacations. They'll go out to eat. And it's like, it's not a sin. But if you're in debt so bad, but what do the kids learn from that? Most adults are dissatisfied with their job. I'm reading from Barna's research. Even though it consumes the majority of their waking hours. Commuting. I knew a man that used to commute to Chicago from where we lived. 2.5 hours one way. Down, work, and then come home. Did it for years. It's his choice. Was it a good choice? I wouldn't have been mine. I know somebody recently who quit a job and got another job first, so he didn't have to drive 45 minutes one way every day. 45 minutes to work, work all day, 45 minutes home. He said, I need it to be with my family. So he took a pay income cut. Doesn't regret it. American parents tend to blame other parents for their problems, evident among today's young people, while excusing themselves from any blame. People will not accept responsibility for their actions. Ultimately, again, Barna says, children get neglected because parents rely upon everyone else to do their job. The popular notion a few years ago, remember this one? It takes a village to raise a child. Has become an accepted excuse for millions of parents to resign, to assign away the commit for their children's development. I don't have to worry about it. Families may not be able to provide everything a child needs to be successfully launched in today's world, but they can do a lot more than they are seeking to provide today. Rather than play victim and blame social institutions for inadequate performance of duties, millions of families would be well advised to rearrange their priorities and reclaim their commitment to preparing their children for life. And God bless my wife, but my wife and I talked about this before we were married and said when we have children, she would not work outside the home until they got old enough. And then we ended to where they were gone and she could be working. Well, what ended while they were at school, what ended up, we began to homeschool them for various reasons. And they traveled with us all over, which I never regret. And she never did get a job. She did some reffing, professionally certified, but she didn't get a job, a career. And people said, oh, your poor wife. Right? Your poor wife. Oh, you're so awful. How could you be like that? I didn't do anything. We discussed that. But if somebody now says, my husband works, or in some cases, stay-at-home dad, my wife works, and I stay home with the children, what? You're crazy. Put him to daycare. I had somebody the other day tell me they pay $34,000 a year for daycare. Both the parents are professionals, and they have a really high-end daycare. But I just can't wrap my head around that. And they were talking about they're having a few little problems with the kiddies. We have the me generation. It's one of the reasons, I'm just going to say this, and here we go. It's one of the reasons my wife and I shy away from birthday parties for little kids. Because the kids get way too many gifts, and as they get older, they expect more and more each year. And I've seen this firsthand. They'll say, I don't like that. I don't want that. And, well, what are they going to bring me for a gift? So we just remember when we were raising our kids, we canned it. We said, done. You can come over, we'll have a meal as a family and wish you a happy birthday and you can have a cake, but no gifts. Don't bring any. We were like the odd people out. The election has led millions of people to identify what they feel are the major issues facing the nation and how each of the major candidates plans to address it. In that light, it's intriguing that comparatively few adults have identified the plight of children and families as one of the key issues. That requires the greater attention. The major concerns listed by voters pertain to their own needs and dreams. What does it say about our society when we admit that our children are being set up for failure, but we don't incorporate that challenge among the most pressing issues facing this nation? What's that tell you? That's kind of depressing. Fewer, this again, 2007 statistics, fewer than one out of every 10 families have parents who pray together, study the Bible together, and lead the family in regular explorations of their faith. The standards of the parents have established for evaluating their own performance as a parent are innocuous. If their children have avoided publicly recognized problems such as physical or substance abuse, gang involvement, satanic activity, pregnancy, or physical aggression, continuing to get passing grades in school and stay relatively healthy, the parents have done an acceptable job. Ta-da! Few parents are aware of the dramatic effect that media, social and other media, have upon people's behavior and values. Just 9% of parents believe the media are the most significant influence on their children's lives. One out of every three parents of kids under 13 still have significant restrictions on limitations how much, what type of media their children are exposed to. Shockingly, few parents have discussions with their children about the content of media. I'm sorry, but you need to pay closer attention to Disney. I prefer not to have Frozen played in my house. It has adult themes. Have you noticed? Now I've offended some, I know. I was watching Bambi with my granddaughter a few months ago. And I never saw it before. You need to go back and watch it carefully. And the euphemisms, it's all over the place. You know what that is? That's substituting a word. That's like gee willigers and gee willies and oh, geez, or oh, my God. That's all okay. No, it's not. So what can parents do? What should we all do? Barna explained that the studies of his parents over the past several years highlight the importance of parental guidance and involvement in shaping a child's behaviors and values. The moral and spiritual development of people is largely determined by the time they reach age 13, and that fundamental changes are minimal after that point. He said, in our most recent work, we have focused on the parenting practices of those who raise children who are now grown and living an exemplary life. By studying these parents and the children, we learned that there are some critical child-rearing habits they all shared. One such habit, Barna noted, was that parents believed that raising children was the most important job they've ever had, and were doing. Even more important than their occupation that pays the bills. They relied upon schools, their church, and other entities support them in that endeavor, but they accepted the primary responsibility for that task and the outcomes. Friends, God is a parent. He's a father. We are his children. Christ is our elder brother. What's the most important job he's doing? Hebrews chapter 2, verse 10, he says he desires to bring many sons to glory to save us and give us eternal life in his family. How do we know that's important to God? He sent his son to die for us. He resurrected him, as we sang in one of the hymns. Christ willingly came to the earth to die for us. In Hebrews 13, 5, he says, I will never, ever leave you or forsake you. God has made access to him central to our relationship through prayer. He talks to us all the time through his word. A second common outlook, Barna continued, was approaching the job of parenting with a plan. Those were parents who had thought through what they were trying to accomplish and how they intended to pursue those outcomes. There's an old saying, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. They were constantly revising their plan, tinkering with different strategies. They were very strategic and intentional in their efforts. They left as little chance as possible and tried to stay a step ahead of their children's needs and the challenges thrown at them by society. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 1. Ephesians chapter 1. In verse 4. Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 4. Because you see, God has a plan for humanity. Ephesians chapter 1, verse 4 and 5. According as he has chosen in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy without blame before him in love, having predestinated, okay, as unto the adoption of children by Christ himself, according to the good pleasure of his will. And verse 9. Having made known unto us the mystery of his will according to his good pleasure, which he had purposed in himself, that in the dispensation of the fullness of times he might gather together in one all things in Christ, both which are in heaven and which are on earth, even in him, and had obtained an inheritance being predestined according to the purpose of him who works all things after the counsel of his own will. God has a plan for a family. Hebrews chapter 12, he says, sometimes God corrects us. You may feel corrected by some of this today. I hope so, if you're a parent. The California-based researcher pointed out that a crucial factor was consistency. The grown children, as well as the parents themselves, agreed that perhaps the single most important element in their success was remaining consistent in the principles and overall standards and values they implemented. When you keep telling a child, if you don't do that, you don't get this, over and over and over, you know what they figure out? They ain't going to do that. I'm going to get my way. I run this place. Well, I ain't letting no five-year-old run my house. Well, you do. Some of you do. The parents set their expectations high. They didn't relax them. They weren't unrealistic. Children rarely exceed their parents' expectations, so the level at which the standards are set determines the heights to which the child will rise. What do you see in society? People, they rise to the lowest standard. You look at it and say, really? You can do better than that. You spend all your money working on your truck. Or your car, I can tell. on your tattoos. I remember telling my daughter, on your vaping, on your smoking, on all the stuff you do. Right? I was talking to a couple landscapers that were laying some stuff for a cable company that had, they were fixing it. And the one guy had gone to the store and he got something he was smoking. And he said, man, I'm going to be broke. I just spent my last $20 on this. And I thought, if you took all the money you had for the tattoos on you, you could probably buy a house. But I didn't say that. You know, that's his choice. But where do you put the standard? The issue of media management was also evident in the families Barna studied. An overwhelming majority of these successful parents believe the media have a significant influence on the lives of children. Consequently, they limited extensively. They monitored and they mediated the media content to which their children exposed. But you know what they see? Dad or mom sits down, dad's always on the laptop. He's always on the computer. He's always on his phone. He's always on the tablet. So what's wrong with that? Nothing. That's what dad or mom do all the time. That's how the society is today. Live with it. I'm watching it dismantle our youth. They often refused to give permission to the kids to watch particular programs or listen to certain music, and regularly had discussions with their children about the content of the media. Did Curious George do the right thing? Oh, are you kidding me? It's for the kids. I don't have time to do that. You better. My daughter, my wife likes to read to my daughter, and every so often I get a book. I'm like, no, I can't read this. And she's like, Pops, what's wrong? I'm like, we're not reading this book. Or I changed the whole story. Pops, that's not how it goes. Well, who read it to you? Because whoever read it to you should have paid closer attention. Those discussions were seldom comfortable or pleasant, but were deemed to be very important in making standards real for their children. If we allow our children to have smartphones, constant access to the internet, Facebook, social media, why does it surprise us that we suffer some of the same consequences? I'm sad to watch parents plant their children in front of a tablet or a phone as their reward to let them sit and watch that because they were good. But it happens. I drove up one of the main streets recently, a few days ago, and I looked at the children waiting for the bus. And it used to be in the Carolinas, the parents would stand out with the children, not so much here. But many of them were on their phone, glaring at it. Kids were all around, nobody talking to each other as children learn social skills. They don't need that. So then when they get older, they get a job where they need that, they don't do so well. They need a job where there's no interaction with people, just their phone or their tablet or their computer. The spiritual side of life is another of the central factors addressed by successful parents. These were parents who took the development of their child's worldview seriously, invested enormous amounts of time and energy, laying a spiritual foundation that has proven to serve the children well throughout their life. So then when they get older, they're successful in their life. They travel all over the world with their job. Church, not so much, if at all. Study the Bible, not really. Good people, what's that going to produce for them? Well, they'll have a great retirement. They'll provide the income needed for maybe their children or grandchildren. But what about their relationship with God? Well, that's not my business. Well, maybe it is. Maybe you can say something. Timing. You know, you don't lecture. You don't put down. You don't attack. But nobody wants to say, this is the type of message. You're not going to hear a lot of these from people. Even in God's church, if you will, that those that try to follow them, they're not going to touch this baby with a 10-foot pole. Because you go from preaching and teaching to meddling. Right? Besides teaching spiritual beliefs and moral principles, these parents shared religious experience with their children and prayed for and with them every day. The view of such parents is that their children are a gift from God, and they therefore had an intense, specific responsibility to raise a child that pleases God. Proverbs 22, verse 6. Let's go back to Proverbs 22 and verse 6. We read this recently. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. In 1917, the Jewish edition says, as he gets older. So train up a child in the way he should go, and as he gets older, he will not depart from it. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 1 to 9. Let's read that. We need to. We're almost done. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 1 to 9. And we need to close with this or read this before I close. Deuteronomy 6, verse 1 to 9. Now these are the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments which the Lord your God commanded to teach you, that you might do them in the land where you go to possess it, that you might fear the Lord your God to keep all his statutes and his commandments which I command you, you and your son's son, all the day of your life. So it means sons and daughters, children, that your days may be prolonged. Hear therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with you, and that you may increase mightily, as the Lord God of your fathers has promised you, in the land that flows with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart. And you shall teach them. The word here means to engrave, to hammer, to chisel diligently unto your children, and shall talk of them. And when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up, a family's time that lives, worked, ate, were taught, back originally was in the home. What's changed? And you shall bind them for a sign upon your hand, and shall be as frontlets between your eyes, and you shall write them upon the posts of your house, and on your gates. And then it goes on. Brethren and friends, as parents, our major job is helping to shape the next generation. We have a huge responsibility in doing so. As grandparents, as aunts, as uncles, as brethren, our example must ring very clear to our children and grandchildren and our families. Because God desires godly seed to be produced. If you haven't noticed, we are in a battle for our children. We're in a battle for our grandchildren. The forces of evil are out to destroy the family and undermine true godly values. We must stand in the gap and realize all of us, each one of us, have to live this way of life, our example, and eventually we're going to teach it to all mankind. Do you think some of us are going to teach what we have in our homes now in the time, then what's coming when Christ returns? No. Yes, it's a lot of work. Sorry. No, I'm not sorry. It's a lot of work. When you made your children as God created us to do, did we give any thought of what we were bringing into the world? It's indeed a very serious matter and a pressing one. God loves children. We're his children. God loves children, so do we. Will we take that responsibility seriously. I pray this message will be received. I pray you'll listen. I pray you will seek our Father and His Son and His Word and your families. If you do, you will never regret that. Let's close in prayer. Our Father in heaven, we come before you. Thank you so much for life itself and for you've given us an opportunity to have children and grandchildren, some of us, and to learn that. And we ask your blessing. We ask your help, your encouragement, your strength to stand in the gap and do what's right, no matter what the culture, the world may teach, what our peers may teach, what other families, what social media, movies, and sadly, even some preachers of your word, they call themselves. Father, we ask your blessing and help and encouragement and strength and forgiveness. We also pray you'll bless the meal we're about to partake of. Thank you for it. And we ask all of this now, and please bring us back safely. And thank you. And we ask this in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.